chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to News Talk, and this is D.G. Martin. Well, it's the time for preparing for Thanksgiving, and it's not just for the wonderful meals that we will share with family and friends. There's a lot more to think about during this time of thankfulness, but also of stress and strain as we face the season to come. To help me get ready, I've asked my old friend Joe Harvard, who is the senior pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Durham and the author of a new book on Ephesians. He's been my friend for more than 50 years, Joe. It's hard to think about it, but nobody I can think of that I'd rather guide me in preparing for Thanksgiving than you. So thanks for coming over to Chapel Hill to visit with us.
Well, thank you, DG. This is an honor. I'm glad to be here. We do go back a long way. We had some good times growing up together, and I'm glad to be reconnected with you and to talk about Thanksgiving as we prepare for what is actually my favorite holiday of the whole year. I'm a big Thanksgiving guy.
Well, before you get started, I mean, right, just to put it in perspective, a lot of people in Durham and all over have been thankful recently, in the fairly recent past, celebrating the 30th anniversary of your coming to Durham to serve that community. And while you grew up in South Carolina, I guess you're thoroughly Durhamized now, aren't you?
I've been here long enough to be almost to be a native, not quite. Yeah, the congregation I serve in downtown Durham is getting ready to celebrate its 140th birthday at the end of December, December 31st. It was founded in 1871, right where it is now on the corner of Roxburgh and Main. But I tell people the church is 140 years old, but I have not been serving it for the whole 140 years. I've only been there a little over 30 years.
Well, it's an interesting challenge. You know, I grew up in Davidson, and which is Presbyterian in the same sense that Duke is Methodist.
Right.
And so the Methodist church was an extraordinary. It was like Avis competing, but it didn't stay number two. I mean, they just worked so hard. But nevertheless, it was the Methodist Church and the Presbyterian community. And so it's a real, real tough assignment, isn't it, for the Presbyterian Church in Durham to compete with the Methodist, who's sort of got a blanket of history and tradition there.
Well, DG, I really don't see it as competition, and I know all of the clergy around me don't feel the same way about that, because Duke Chapel is a big presence, as you can imagine. I mean, for example, their Christmas Eve service, thousands of people come to that service, but I see that as an advantage. I mean, we do what we can do as a congregation and are active in the city of Durham, but we also have the opportunity to participate in some really great music, wonderful services that they provide. So I really have always had a good relationship with Duke Chapel and with the deans of the chapel, primarily Will Willimon and now Sam Wells, and they are very active in the community. So I look at this and we're kind of in this together. And I understand why people get their nose out of joint sometimes, because they feel like the chapel is a little bit overbearing. But I have not found them to be that way. So I love the relationship.
That's great. Well, I interrupted you when you said that Thanksgiving is your favorite holiday.
Yes, you did. And I knew you'd get me back to that sometime. For a number of reasons. I think as a Christian minister, Thanksgiving takes us to the very heart of what the faith is about, and that is about gratitude. About the reason to respond to God is out of gratitude for God's goodness to us, and there are a lot of things to be grateful for, and we get busy. I remember an old English prayer that said, "God, I may be so busy today that I might forget about you, but please don't forget about me."
Oh gosh, that's a great prayer.
So it is a time for us not to forget that we have been blessed. But now, something that's really been impressive to me in the last few years is that Thanksgiving is the great ecumenical holiday. You can wish anybody happy Thanksgiving.
You don't have to worry about Christmas trees. You can have your Thanksgiving because that, although it has a, it can be whatever religious imprint you want to put on it.
Yeah.
It carries over and doesn't offend anybody.
Right, and all the major religious faiths have gratitude at heart, at their core. So it's something we share. It's really a common bond. And I mean, I love that. I love to be able to walk into the post office or into the grocery store down the street and wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Hope you're going to have a good meal, a good visit, and know that this is something we all share. That's a very comforting sort of thing. It's really delightful, and it builds bridges of understanding between people, and we don't have enough experiences that give us a chance to do that. So I'm grateful for Thanksgiving and look forward to another good Thanksgiving on Thursday.
Well, what take us back in time to your memories of Thanksgiving. You grew up in Columbia, or you grew up all as your dad was. Your dad was both in business and a minister. I mean, he came to the ministry later on in life, so you moved around a little bit, I guess.
My dad was in business until he was 40 years old, and then he went to seminary. And so I did grow up. I grew up in small towns, and then when he became a pastor, we lived first in Pensacola, Florida, and then in Columbia, South Carolina. And so we were separated from family. So one of my memories is that the old song, you know, over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Well, we did that. I mean,
back to your parents' house
at their homes early in life. We did that, it's an in gathering time, and I remember it. You know, you see relatives, and the other thing I love about Thanksgiving, I'm working down that list of why it's my favorite holiday, is that a lot of the pressure of other holidays is just not there. You don't have to give anybody any presents. You don't have to worry if you got the right thing for anybody. You just are able to be with people and to enjoy their company and to enjoy some good food together and to relax. It's a great break, I think. I think it's good for us spiritually and also mental health-wise. I mean, I think it provides a good break. It's also, I hope, a time when we can focus ourselves on some major values that are important, that have been important in this culture that seem to be slipping away, like our responsibility as those who have been blessed to share our blessings with others. I am increasingly concerned about the growing gap between the so-called haves and have-nots. I get a little concerned when you start saying if you got material stuff, then you're wealthy, and if you don't have material things, you're... I was with some folks over on one of the barrier islands of Georgia. It's the oldest Gullah Geechee intact community. And I, one of the women that has been in that community for... Her family's been in there for 300 years. She said, I guess growing up, we didn't have much, but we didn't know that. She said, we had family and we had love for each other. We had support for each other. So I'm trying to be kind of careful to say that what defines you, whether you're a wealthy or not a wealthy person, is your physical resources. But once all that's been said, far too many of our children grow up in poverty. I've been astounded, as we said earlier, I've been in Durham over 30 years, and the poverty rate in Durham is it's one of the Durham County is one of the most affluent counties in the state of North Carolina, but it's also has had a poverty level of about 20% that's just been consistent. You know, the old adage that all boats rise together. Well, when boats have risen, there've been some boats that hadn't gone anywhere. They've remained static. So I think this holiday also is a time for us to think about our responsibilities toward our neighbors and the fact that it's not just about us and about getting as much as we can for ourselves. And that's about personal involvement. Well, but it also takes us into something that you're very much aware of, and that's public policy.
Well, let's take a break and then talk a little bit about public policy in the context of Thanksgiving. I'm visiting with Joe Harvard, who's the senior pastor at First Presbyterian Church in Durham. He and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about Thanksgiving, and I'm visiting with Joe Harvard, a longtime friend who is the longtime pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Durham. And Joe, I mean, 30 years, good golly. I mean, most people don't even work total for 30 years in their whole career. I mean, this is hard because I think of you as you're younger than I am. And you're, I mean, these people in Durham say, there's that old man preaching over there. And I'm thinking of you, that you're a kid. I mean, what's it like to move into senior, venerable status.
Into senior status, that's right.
Yeah.
I tell you, there are a lot of advantages. I never envisioned myself ever staying in one church for 30 years. When Carlisle and I moved here, Carlisle's my wife, when we moved here, I thought it was coming to a downtown church, and downtown churches need some stability. So I told myself, well, you certainly will need to stay there 10 years in order to make that work. But every decade almost, there was a new challenge. And we love the community. We love the area, the Triangle area. And Carlisle had a job as director of the International House at Duke University, a job that she held for 21 years, and that was a great job, and she loved it, and so we enjoyed working here. But I really have seen Durham change, and the congregation has changed. It's because it's in a university setting, universities, number of universities, a lot of people come and go, and so you keep the congregation has changed a great deal. And the minister hasn't. So I've really felt like it's been a really nice, compatible situation. So
you'll be over. We're having a conversation sort of centered around Thanksgiving, and you're thankful for this experience,
right?
Still,
yeah, I'm very grateful to the congregation. We're having a good time together still, and I'm so grateful to them because just about a year ago, I had an open heart surgery. I had an aneurysm on my aorta, which fortunately they discovered before it ruptured, and the surgeons at Duke were able to go in and repair it. It was pretty major surgery, and so I was out for 2 months. All of December and January, and the congregation and the community were very supportive. And so I'm really back trying to say thank you for helping me, nursing me, supporting me through a really tough
Yeah, well, situation. They would say he earned it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Well, Joe, talk for a minute about churches and Thanksgiving. And you talked earlier about what a great thing it is for those of us who are sensitive to the religious beliefs or the ethical beliefs of others And it gets complicated at Easter and at Christmas time. It's not complicated, as you point out, at Thanksgiving time. But it is a little bit complicated in the church because you have this American holiday that has religious overtones, but it's not really a church holiday. Churches go all over the place in how they celebrate. Or what do you have, services on Thanksgiving? Do you just mention it on the Sundays before and after? Do you have events? How do you and your colleagues wrestle with that question?
That's a great question, DG, and there are a variety of answers because every tradition does it, and particular congregations have different traditions. Some traditions, for example, the Episcopal Church, they traditionally have a Thanksgiving service at 10 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day.
Almost all Episcopal Church. I mean, throughout the denomination.
I would dare say that any community that has Episcopal churches, you can find a service at 10 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day. And we have celebrated Thanksgiving. My family has in Columbia, South Carolina, where some of my relatives are Episcopalians. And so we always went to the Trinity Cathedral in downtown Columbia at 10 o'clock for the service, a great service. We don't have a service at the Presbyterian Church, and we celebrate Thanksgiving on the Sunday before Thanksgiving. We have a Thanksgiving service, which we had this last Sunday. One of the things I've discovered about Thanksgiving is that for most of our people, they're traveling, they're going to be with family or have family coming to visit with them. And so Thanksgiving is a largely family holiday. I learned from my Jewish friends that a lot of their celebrations throughout the year are done in the home. The Seder meal, for example, is done in the home. So I think that the celebration of Thanksgiving for a lot of folks who are religious takes place when they gather around the table and pray and give thanks and do whatever they do to express their gratitude to God and to each other. So, and then in a number of communities on the Wednesday night before, we did this in Durham for a while, the Wednesday night before there was an ecumenical service in one of the churches. It so happened that very few people from the other churches that were involved were coming. Only those that felt the responsibility.
Felt the obligation as the host.
to be hosts were there. So at that point, we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, people are really celebrating this at home, and let's encourage them to do that. And so we dropped that practice. And the fact is that because there are services in Episcopal churches and other congregations, it's not that people don't have a place that they can go and worship. And in fact, this is a good experience to go and worship in another congregation. The Episcopal Thanksgiving service is a great service.
Is it in the prayer book? I mean, they've got a Thanksgiving Day service.
They use one of the rites of the Episcopal Church.
I love that comparison. I also love the comparison of the Seder and the idea that as Jewish families celebrate Passover, it's sort of the defining, not just religious, but the defining national experience for the overall Hebrew nation that Americans have this is the beginning of our nation event, and it began with Thanksgiving, and that we celebrate that as a patriotic as well as sort of a religious holiday to thank God for giving us this, the bounty, I guess. I guess that's right. I don't know. Well, Joe, it's all well and good, but I mean, there can't be just an upside to this. I mean, is it just an upside? Are there things that are there downsides to this holidays? Do people, you have people who come out of Thanksgiving sometimes with challenges? Sometimes when you have these family events, it brings to the forefront problems. Yeah. Do you have a history of having to give extra counseling around Thanksgiving?
Well, it's not just all upside. You're exactly right, and you pointed to one of the tensions that comes up, and that is we don't all get along with all of our with all of our family members as well, you know, and some of those tensions come to the surface when we're together, and so some people who have difficult dynamics within the family really dread. And, you know, that they feel some obligation to be present, and yet for them it's not a pleasurable experience. It's not a good experience. And so there is that challenge. The other challenge is also the sense of people who are not at the table. When you sit down and there was a beloved parent who's always loved Thanksgiving and always a big part of the Thanksgiving celebration— And you know that, you know, everybody feels the absence of that person. You know, feeling that absence is not a bad thing, but it's a painful thing. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, whom I'm sure you've read, was a German pastor who stood up against the Nazis, and he wrote some powerful letters and papers from prison. And in one letter to his parents at Advent, he said that he really missed them. There was a real hole in his life because he couldn't be with them for the celebration of the holidays. And he said, you know, God doesn't fill that hole, though. He said, God keeps that hole vacant because it's a reminder and a connection with the people from whom you're separated, people who are no longer with you. And I've always found that helpful, the fact that when somebody dies that you know and love and who was a big part of your life, there is a hole in your life, and it's not the most helpful thing to say, well, you know, let me fill that hole real quickly with something, because that space represents somebody who was really significant to you, and to continue to return to that space, that person, is a way that we in the Christian tradition we call it the communion of the saints. It's a way we continue to be connected with all those saints who have lived and influenced our lives. So, but it's not.
It's still tough. It's still tough. It's still tough. Yeah. Well, I'm visiting with Joe Harvard, senior minister at the First Presbyterian Church in Durham. Talking about Thanksgiving and the things that surround it, and he and I'll be right back after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin, and my guest is Joe Harvard, senior pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Durham. We're talking about and around Thanksgiving. Joe, you know, we've been reminiscing some, and one of the things that makes me realize that I have been around a while, as I read in the paper about some of the people who are being called back to work on Thanksgiving. In other words, for a long time, Thanksgiving was sort of we're going to have a holiday on that, and you save you shopping for the next day for what we call Black Friday. And yeah. So now we're getting a jump on that some of the stores see an advantage that people have some extra time on Thanksgiving, so stores are going to be open. And it led me to think about when you and I were teenagers, we had Sundays off. I mean, mm-hmm. Sundays were pretty much the blue laws. Protected us from all of that, and so most of the stores were closed on Sundays, and that was a pretty good thing, really, just put aside all religious connections to it. It gave a time where you paused, and we bargained away Thanksgiving as well. Now, are we getting ready to bargain away Thanksgiving as this sort of quiet holiday where you could sit down and have a meal with all your family?
I read the same articles and heard the same reports, and I have to tell you, it was distressing to me because the people who are being called back to work won't have much choice in whether they do that or not, and it will deprive them of that. And so I think it is letting the commercialism creep into what has been a really important time for people to, and, you know, it's been creeping up on us. You know, they've been starting at midnight on Black Friday, people lining up, and then those horrible sort of stampedes where people would run over each other to get inside, so they'd be the first one to get a particular toy. I must say, and I don't want to sound too self-righteous or anything, but I found that rather repulsive. And one of the less attractive aspects of our sort of commercialism in this culture, where that we are, there's an old hymn called God of Grace and God of Glory, said we're rich in things and poor in soul. And it seems that not being able to take the time to give thanks and to be with family, you're probably right. They'll probably start opening at noon on Thanksgiving before long, and it'll keep creeping back. Which is one of the things that happened. I'm not for going back, by the way, to the blue laws when everything was closed on Sunday and you couldn't by law do anything on Sunday. I remember as a kid always being a little jealous of my friends who could go to the movies. And we called it the picture show then on Sunday. And as a minister's kid, that was off limits for me. But the concept of Sabbath, you know, the seventh day you rested, that's not only an important religious occasion, it's also a physical, spiritual, I mean, psychological, to find time in your life when you can be still and not be so busy is really important. We really don't have enough time to do the things that are important, that really are healthy for us. And I'm talking about, you know, obviously the exercise, but I'm also talking about being with people that are important to you. One of the things that's always interested me is this guy said, you know, I never heard a guy who was in hospice care near the end of his life say, you know, one of the regrets I have is I didn't have more time to be in the office. Mm-hmm. I didn't have more time to work. He said, most of the regrets are the people that I didn't take the time to invest myself with. So I think another great advantage of Thanksgiving is for a couple of days, we can be with people that we know and love, and we don't have to apologize for that. It's in fact, it's encouraged, expected. So that's a good thing, and I hope that how do you resist market pressures? And
I don't know. I mean, yeah. You have to flirt with the idea of being a heavy-handed regulator.
That's right.
And it's harder, as you point out, it's harder on the blue laws than many of the religious people that I knew back then during the transition, at least those who were progressive, said, no, we don't want to impose our Sabbath, our Sunday on other people. This ought to be a matter of freedom, and I respected that. But Thanksgiving is sort of like our national Sabbath, and it's secular. It is not coming out of religious viewpoint, but as you were just saying, it is a time where you pause, join with family. It's a time where, if you want, you can reflect. But it's of great benefit for many reasons as our nation to have people stop. So I could be persuaded to do some regulating if I were in charge. Now, that's, of course, not, as you say, not going to happen. But we can say each of us has the power in our own lives to define the holiday the way we want. We don't have to go out at midnight and shop, or at 10 o'clock if they're, or 8 o'clock if they're going to open up those doors, and we can plan our day so that it accomplishes those objectives.
Yeah, I think that's been one of my learnings, DG, over the years. Is that the fact that things happen that I don't agree with, like pushing back the starting of Black Friday till Thursday, is not all bad in the sense that I have the right and to decide how I want to do that. I'm not. I don't have to go out and shop on over the Thanksgiving weekend, and therefore, and I can encourage those that I know and love not to do the same thing, and therefore, it makes a lot more sense if it's something that I choose not to do, and not that you won't let me do that, mm-hmm. because it offends you. Then you say, well, then we're gonna shut this down. Well, you know, if people are so eager to make money that they want that they feel like they have to, you know, push into Thanksgiving, well, that's their problem. But I don't have to support that or go along with that, and that grows out of my own values of what's important and ones that you just articulated. It's a time for us as individuals and as a country to step back and to reflect on the fact that we've been gifted in some really wonderful ways.
I'm visiting with Joe Harvard. He's a senior minister at First Presbyterian Church in Durham. We're talking about Thanksgiving, and we'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Joe Harvard, my old friend. He's the senior pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Durham. We've been talking about Thanksgiving and about some of the mostly, I mean, it's almost all good things, but there's some downsides to Thanksgiving. But Joe, I didn't even ask you, all right, we've been talking about other people. How, I mean, you're like many of us, you're complicated. No longer can we can't go to our parents' house anymore. Our children are almost too old to be coming back to our house. They're having their own. But how do you and Carlisle solve your Thanksgiving challenge? Do you travel? Do you stay at home and let people come to you? Do you contact by telephone? Or do you have pastoral responsibilities that keep you from celebrating the way you?
Our Thanksgiving has been a really special time for us in the sense that my wife Carlisle is one of six children. And her mother did a great job. Her father died young, and her mother did a great job of keeping the children together by offering them a great gift of coming to the beach for 2 weeks at her expense, so that the cousins who lived in a lot of different places could get to know each other. And so we developed a tradition of spending Thanksgiving together with that family in Columbia, South Carolina, and we did that. We've done that for about 40, 50 years. And unfortunately, and this is part of what we talked about earlier, the woman who had hosted us, who was a really wonderful interior design person, the sister-in-law of married to Carlisle's brother, who's a U.S. attorney in South Carolina, she died a year and a half ago from breast cancer. And so that's really
– you've lost that the family tradition. Yeah. So what do you do now?
Well, we're still getting together, but we don't go to their house. She always threw this incredible Thanksgiving dinner, and she loved to do it, and it was great. So now we gather together, but we don't gather at her home, because in some ways that would be too difficult to do that without her. But it's still a great time.
So where do you go?
We go to Carlisle has two sisters that live near Georgetown, South Carolina, and one of them lives at Litchfield. So we go to Litchfield.
That's not a bad place to relax and to, I guess.
It's a great place, and people, all the children love to come to this thing.
So even your children, your and Carlisle's brothers and sisters' children are together.
That's
on
right.
This. I mean, not everybody can come, I'm sure, but you got a large selection of them.
We'll have 30 or 40, and so that's.
And what do you do? What do you cook? What do you bring?
What I cook, I run errands.
You say the prayer. You say the blessing.
That's right. That's right. I'm the family priest. I do the prayer, and I try to help around the edges. But I'm not a very good cook. So they are just as happy if I'm out of the kitchen trying to prepare drinks and keep it and make sure everybody's.
Well, they do ask you to lead the. I mean, a brief religious service at the beginning for a prayer, and do you? That's a challenge because you probably already in a family of an American family's got even one that kind of grew up in the same tradition. New traditions have developed, and new spouses, and so the minister who's called, or any of us who are called upon to pray for a meal with a diverse group of people, do you spend some time thinking about it, or do you just extemporaneous get up and say thank you for the food, amen?
No, it is a very sacred moment, and one that I am I feel honored to be called upon to do for this family. And there's usually something very important that needs to be remembered in that prayer. Either someone who's not there, or someone who's going through a difficult time, or some special gift that we've received as a family. Either someone has gotten married, or there's been a new child born. It's an important time for us to pause and give thanks. And support and encourage each other and ask for God's support and encouragement. I find it to be a very meaningful thing, and I probably should share that opportunity with other members of the family, but since I'm the trained theologian in the crowd, they call on me to do that, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, I think it's a challenge. I mean, always. Exactly. I mean, because we got these different ideas about prayer, and I mean, you know, the continuing one is are our prayers sermons or are they prayers? You know, right. and what's the difference? And you know, when you're in the pulpit, you've got the opportunity to give your sermon, and then you move on and do prayers separately at the beginning of a Thanksgiving meal. Those of us who are not professional prayers sometimes get off on sending messages to the people around the table rather than trying to collect the. I don't know. Is that a challenge? Maybe that's not a challenge. I mean, you've been to seminary. You know all those challenges and how to get around them. I don't.
Well, prayers are really important, and they're important expressions of our faith. One of the important ways we practice our faith is through prayer. You referenced earlier this commentary on Ephesians. Ephesians is in some ways a long.
I should say that Joe has got a new book on Ephesians, right. And it's just. You didn't write Ephesians, but you wrote a book about Ephesians.
I didn't write Ephesians.
And so we should promote that. It's available for purchase.
I had the real privilege and honor of co-authoring that with Professor Alan Verhey, who teaches ethics at Duke Divinity School, who's a real fine academician as well as a good human being. And one of his specialties is medical ethics. He's written a book that's very, very well received on reading the Bible in the age of modern medicine. He's just finished a book that's getting ready to come out called The Art of Dying, which got a MacArthur grant. He's gotten a lot of good. So when he asked me to do that, it was quite an honor. But what we discovered in our study and reflection was Ephesians is a lot about prayer, and prayer is an essential way in which we express our faith in all traditions. My wife and I spent 10 days in Turkey last spring, and one of the astounding things about that was that, you know, Turkey is a Muslim country, so five times during the day there's a call to prayer, wherever you are, you hear this call to prayer, and I thought, wow. You know, you're busy going about your life, and then all of a sudden you hear a call that says, you know, there's more to your life than just what you're doing. Now, not everybody stops and prays, but there is that reminder. The other thing I'll say is that one of my favorite contemporary writers is a woman named Annie Lamont, and she's written a lot of really good stuff. And she says there are two basic prayers that she prays every day. One of them is, help me, help me, help me. And the other one is thank you, thank you, mm-hmm. thank you. Well, we often, sometimes the only time we pray is when we need to do the help me prayer. And I think one of the great things about Thanksgiving is it's one of those times that we stop and say, thank you.
So the Thanksgiving prayer at the beginning of the meal is just fully what we're thankful.
Right.
And Thanksgiving, I mean, it does have this religious tone. Who are you going to give thanks to if it's not to God?
Right.
I guess we can be thankful for what other people have done for us as well.
Yeah.
But it sort of frames, I guess, the proper kind of prayer for Thanksgiving. Nevertheless, for me, it's a challenge when you're asked to pray, not to get into the too much of here's what I think you all ought to be thinking
right.
about, but here's what our common we join together to give thanks at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and I think one of the important things about the community, being together with the community, is that it's a very important reminder that we are all dependent on other people who, you know, as one of my favorite sayings is, we all drink from wells we didn't dig. And stand on walls we didn't build, and there's a tendency in our society to think that we're self-made people, as the old adage says, that you know somebody was born on third base and they think they hit a triple. You know, we're all beneficiaries.
We've all been born pretty much on home, well, coming in home plate.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And particularly when you look at the world that we live in terms of how many people are hungry, how many people don't have the basic necessities of life. I heard a statistic the other day that 2/3 of the people in the world don't have indoor plumbing. Mm. I mean, that's an incredible thing for something that we all take for granted. I don't say that to say, we ought to feel guilty or, you know,
yeah.
put on sackcloth and ashes. But we ought to be thankful.
We ought to be thankful.
And ought to try to find ways that we can share what we
extend
have.
Extend that thankfulness. Yep. Well, I'm thankful for this time with you, Joe Harvard, for helping us put Thanksgiving in the even better perspective.
Well, and I am grateful for your friendship. Thank you.
And I'm grateful for yours as well, and also grateful to you for listening. This has been Who's Talking, and I'll be right back here before you know it.